I'm going to introduce our last speaker today, Dr. Vern Smith. Dr. Smith is currently a principal at Health Manage Associates in Lansing, Michigan. All three of his degrees are in economics. He was a public servant in Michigan for 30 years, and he tells me these were a very rewarding 30 years. He spent 5 years as the Medicaid director, so he administered all aspects of the $4 billion Michigan Medicaid program, which provided benefits to 1 million Michigan citizens and processed 60 million claims annually. He's most well known recently for conducting annual studies of how states are responding to the growth in Medicaid costs. He's going to be featured in a Kaiser webcast next week with his latest results. He's spoken in over 40 states in many, many meetings, including the National Governors Association, the Council of State Governments. He's testified before Congress many times. He's also advised several organizations. I'm going to only mention two. He served on the governing board of the National Academy for State Health Policy, and for the U.S. Healthcare Financing Administration, he chaired the Medicaid Maternal and Child Health Advisory Group. Now, in my background checking on Dr. Smith, I learned that he's a golfer, and he went on to explain that he's an enthusiastic bogey golfer. And I want to tell you, we have a lot of bogey golfers at our... And I think I found something that might work for you, this hat that says Bogeyman. Do you think that would work?
That's excellent. Thank you. I like the red color.
Yeah. So his topic today is, what are states doing to control Medicaid costs, and why is it so hard?
Well, thank you, Karen. I appreciate that very nice introduction. And thank you for the opportunity to be here. Thank you for the invitation. And what a privilege it is to be in this Capitol building. As Karen said, I've had the chance to be in many state capitals over the last few years. I love going into Capitol buildings. I would be hard-pressed to find a Capitol building that is more elegant and impressive than this one. And what a setting between the lakes. It's just a beautiful place. So thank you for the chance to be here in Madison. Thank you for also the chance to talk on this topic of Medicaid, which is so important all around the country now and in Washington. I have an impossible task. First of all, it's impossible because, following folks like John Hollihan and Martha King, who I've admired their work over the years, and so it's a great privilege to be on the podium with them. We're here to talk about what is unquestionably the most important, most significant, most complex healthcare program in America today. Martha and John have laid out some of the statistics, but when you look at this program and what it's become, it's almost beyond comprehension what Medicaid has come to be and what it means to the people that the program serves. When you look at this program now, there are 58 million people in this country in 2005 who have Medicaid as their health care coverage. Bigger than Medicare. Medicare this year will serve around 41, 42 million individuals. So it's clearly larger in terms of the number of people that it serves. Medicaid this year, including the state funds that you put into it and the federal funds that match those, all around the country will be well over $300 billion. It accounts for over 2.5% of the gross national product of this country. It's larger than Medicare this year and last year in terms of its overall spending. It kind of sneaked up on Medicare and became larger, both in terms of the number of people served and in terms of the dollars that the program accounts for. So it's very, very large and very, very significant in terms of what it does. Medicaid is kind of a program of niches. It kind of goes where no one else fears to tread. Where there's a gap in the commercial a private health insurance system, there's Medicaid to provide coverage for the children, for the parents, for the uninsured adults, for pregnant women, and those groups account for about half or two-thirds of the number of people on the program. Where private insurance couldn't work if it had to cover the really high-cost individuals with chronic conditions, all of us are subsidized, in effect, because private health insurance premiums would be even higher if private health insurance had to cover this particular group. So Medicaid is there supporting private health insurance. Long-term care. There really is no other long-term care program in this country except Medicaid. Medicaid is there to cover the really high cost of nursing home care and increasingly the cost of long-term care in the community. And over the last 10, 15 years, Medicaid has been the program that has helped finance virtually every state or local health care program. 15 years ago, when I was Medicaid director, we did not exploit the opportunities for Medicaid to be the financing mechanism for mental health, for example. And then with the deinstitution of mental health, Medicaid has come in to finance that care in the community. And now then, over half of the publicly financed mental health care is paid for by Medicaid. Virtually all public health programs have Medicaid as a source of financing. School-based health care, it's just everywhere. And then you look at Medicare. Medicare could not be the program that it is if it weren't for Medicaid. It comes as a huge surprise for most people to learn that 42% of all that Medicaid spends, 42%, is for persons who are also on Medicare, 42%. So that's a big, big role for the program. Now, the thing that has brought Medicaid into the middle of the healthcare radar screen really has been its cost, particularly over the last 4 or 5 years when the economy turned down, and Medicaid is a counter-cyclical program. So when the economy turns down, Medicaid goes up, the demands on Medicaid go up. And this graph kind of shows going back to the last recession in the early 1990s when Medicaid costs were high. And then during, as the economy improved, and we got into a period of time in the mid-1990s when Medicaid enrollment actually declined, we'll see in a second, for 3 years. And then as healthcare costs increased and the economy went down and more people came on, then the cost increase peaked in 2002 at around 13% on average around the country. And then since then, as the economy's improved, the costs have come down a bit as well. The state budget directors are concerned about Medicaid and the finance committee chairs and so on, because one of the things that's happened is Medicaid has increased, particularly during this period of an economic downturn, as state revenues have taken a dip. You know, the arithmetic of that is that Medicaid increasingly becomes a larger share of overall state budgets. And so what we've seen is that Medicaid has grown over the last 20 years from about 8% on average of state budgets. Now, this year, it's going to be almost a quarter of state budgets and on average around the state, around the country. In 2003, Medicaid became, on average, the largest single component of state budgets, surpassing elementary and secondary education. Long it had been greater than higher education. So Medicaid now in most states is, you know, the biggest chunk of state budgets. So this all just kind of puts a little dimension around it and kind of the problem that we're trying to solve. Now then, you know, why is it so hard to solve it? And what we find when we look at the things that are driving Medicaid spending, what we find is that most of the things that are driving Medicaid spending are actually beyond the control of state policymakers. Part of it, Medicaid overall costs are kind of the product of two factors. One is what's happening with the number of people on the program, and one is what's happening with the cost per person on the program. John has talked a little bit about some of these factors already, but I just want to very quickly go over them before talking about some of the things that states have actually done. This looks at what happened with the number of people on Medicaid nationally over the last 12, 13 years. And what we see, again, as well as any slide that I can think of, illustrates the counter-cyclical nature of the program. You see during the last recession very high rates of growth in the number of people on the program, 10% in 1992, for example, and then declining. In the mid-1990s, we had two key things happening. One was a robust economy through that period of time, and we had welfare reform. And Wisconsin, of course, was one of the leaders in welfare reform, so you had a larger than the national average drop in people on Medicaid through that period of time. But then as the economy kind of began to reverse. And at the same time that state revenues were going down, the number of people on Medicaid accelerated up again. When you look at this, actually, and we're looking at around roughly 4% growth in 2005. The rate of growth is slowing again in terms of the projections for 06, maybe on the order of 3%. But when you look at that over the period of time from 2001 through the present time, and you do the compound rate of growth on that, it's about a 40% increase in the number of people on Medicaid just in the last 5 years or so. So it's that's really significant. It's been a major contributor. Now, I put this together. This slide is a little different. Well, I should say some of the slides I'm using today are different from the ones that you have in the handout. Try to, you know, economize here. Actually, my wife says I'm a compulsive tweaker. I like to think of it as continuous quality improvement. But this slide you don't have in the packet. But you have one like it, but I narrowed it down here to annual rates of growth. But you see here in Wisconsin the same sort of thing, a dip in the mid-1990s and then increasing rates of growth. And then if you were to kind of look at that, just like the national average, it's increasing but at a slower rate each year for the last couple of years, so paralleling the national trends in that regard. Now, here is a very significant slide, and it breaks down the change in the number of people on Medicaid into its two primary categories. On the one hand, families and children, and on the other hand, elderly and disabled. And what we see is that the family and children category is much more sensitive to what's happening in the economy. So when the economy was going down, that's when families and children cases jumped. Meanwhile, elderly and disabled are kind of slow but steady as she goes, increasing at a steady rate, slightly increasing from year to year in terms of the rate of growth, but slow and steady, not so responsive to the economy, more driven by demographics than economics. And what you see now, and what's really significant, is that I think Martha had a slide about the cost per person between these two categories and how the elderly and disabled are maybe 5, 6, 7 times more expensive on a per capita basis than the children and families. So what you see is that there's a changing composition of the caseload, and even though the caseload growth is slowing, the composition is turning more toward the elderly and disabled, and that has implications for the long-term growth. So that's kind of on the number of people side, and now we turn to the cost, what's, you know, driving things there. Medicaid operates in the same healthcare marketplace as everyone else. So it's subject to the same cost pressures as Blue Cross, as the major purchasers, major employers, and so on. So what we see is that Medicaid has to try to hold down its rate of growth in the same marketplace where other things are happening over which it doesn't have control. The folks at Study for Studying Health Systems Change have done a very nice job tracking what's been happening in the underlying healthcare costs. And what we see here is that around 8% per year is the underlying rate of growth in healthcare spending in this country. So that's kind of the benchmark. That's the milieu in which Medicaid operates. This is seen on the private side in terms of what's happening in health insurance premiums. And any of you who are business owners and have to look at the cost of health insurance for your employees know exactly what this is all about. Over the last 5 years, there's been a dramatic increase in the cost of health insurance, maybe more so for those of you who may have small businesses. But just look at the cost of family coverage, which has increased about 70% from $6,400 to almost $11,000 per year just from 2000 to 2005. So it's been a tremendous issue in the private sector as well as on the public sector. Now, if you're in the private sector, you have a range of things you can do to try to control costs and in some cases shift costs. Some of the ways to control costs are actually what we call benefit buy-down, shifting costs to the beneficiary somewhat. But you look at premiums, coinsurance, deductibles, copays, all have been strategies, as well as the strategy of simply dropping coverage. And these are, in the main, not strategies that Medicaid has available, certainly not the last one. You know, one of the staggering, to me, statistics that came out of the Kaiser HRAT report that was just released, 3 weeks ago, John, 3 or 4 weeks ago. When you look at the number of firms offering health coverage, there actually was a drop of about 266,000, and 90% of these were small businesses, less than 25 employees. So that's kind of that's the market out there. And as those people become uninsured, and as the market, as the economy, as the employment marketplace shifts more toward a service economy and more small businesses, this has enormous implications for Medicaid. Well, that's what's happening on the private side. That's kind of, you know, why it's so hard. Now, what is it that states have been doing to try to control growth? Next week, when our next study is released, there will be a fifth bar on this for another year. But just based on what's been happening from 2002 through 2005, you can take a look at this and you can see the range of things that states have been doing. I call this my General Creighton Abrams Memorial slide. General Creighton Abrams was a general in World War II. And my favorite World War II quote, General Creighton Abrams, the Battle of the Bulge, found the enemy all around him. He radioed back to headquarters, "I now find myself completely surrounded and have the advantage of being able to attack in any direction." And that, Mark, is exactly what Medicaid programs have been doing, right, including here in Wisconsin, going after every possible way to control the rate of spending growth in the program, because it's been the most difficult 4 years in the history of the program. As we've gone through this economic downturn, as state revenues have turned down, and the program growth has accelerated, it's been a very, very difficult period of time. And states have had to go after things that, you know, in other times you wouldn't have done because the payoff might not have been quite so great. But you look across the waterfront here and see everything that's going on. Actually, I'm going to interrupt myself here because I just saw Martha Rorty. She didn't stand up. And I just have to take a second, and I know Martha is going to be embarrassed here. But Martha Rorty is the director of the National Association of State Medicaid Directors. And she happens to be here. She has family in Wisconsin and happens to be here today, and she's sitting there with Mark. So, Martha, we're happy to have you here today. Never miss an opportunity to, you know, embarrass a colleague. So, when you look at this, you can see all the things that are doing. As John said, the tried and true, the sure way of controlling cost is to freeze or reduce provider payment rates, and every state has done that with at least one or more of the groups of providers. But the other thing that states have done is to turn to drug policy changes, and virtually every state in the country has done one or another thing here. And this has been the prime area because prescription drug spending growth has been one of the primary drivers of Medicaid spending over the last few years. And no one in the country has been more aggressive than Medicaid in pursuing this. And Medicaid has an enormous stake. Medicaid is today the largest purchaser of prescription drugs in every state in the country right now. 19% of the entire prescription drug market in 2005 is through Medicaid. Now, that's going to change next January 1st with the new Medicare prescription drug benefit, but there is a reason why these drug policy changes that are proposed are so difficult sometimes to be enacted, because there's so much at stake for the drug industry on this score. But everything that could be done here, from prior authorization, establishing preferred drug lists, seeking supplemental rebates from manufacturers, increasingly states are now turning to actual monthly limits on the number of scripts. Mostly this is not a strategy that's been pursued in states in the kind of northern half of the country, but it is something that states are looking at. And states are looking at multi-state purchasing possibilities. One of the other things that is done is to look at managed care. In the recession in the 1990s, this was the magic bullet. And most states turned to managed care. Wisconsin was an early adopter of managed care. You have a couple of folks in your Medicaid history that are a part of the national scene. Tina Nye, when she was Medicaid director, and Mary Duane, Tina recruited to come to Washington to head up the Office of Managed Care for the Federal Healthcare Financing Administration. So you all have had an impact on how managed care is, Medicaid managed care is developed around the country. But you can see that states have turned to this, and increasingly now the focus is on turning to mandatory enrollment of all populations, expanding managed care to geographic areas that were never considered possible for managed care, enrolling the SSI population, the elderly and disabled, into managed care wherever possible. And I know you all are pursuing those kinds of strategies as well. Now, there are other things that states are doing. John mentioned the kind of care management, case management, disease management strategies. A few years ago, states went into this thinking that maybe they would get savings. Immediate savings turned out not to be possible. And states also have begun to look at disease-specific programs may not be the best way to go, because rarely do you find someone just with diabetes or just with asthma or just with congestive heart failure. There's a lot of comorbidity here. And so people are beginning to do kind of a care management approach as opposed to a disease management approach, to kind of look at those 4% that comprise half of the Medicaid spending kind of group and target on that. A lot of focus on fraud and abuse. It's more than a money issue for Medicaid. When you're administering a program as large as Medicaid, there's nothing more important than complete confidence in the fiscal integrity of the program, and so it's very important to have kind of continuous vigilance on your fraud and abuse efforts, and many states have redoubled their efforts in this regard. And other states have looked at ways to use Medicaid as a financing mechanism through provider taxes or other mechanisms, special financing mechanisms. Now, long-term care is about a third of Medicaid spending overall, and this has been an area, and I know in Wisconsin that long-term care is a very important component of the Medicaid program. Increasingly, states have turned, as you can see here, toward home and community-based avenues for delivering long-term care. It's more cost-effective, and even though there's kind of a woodwork effect sometimes that materializes, it's a preferred venue for the delivery of care for many folks. These, in some ways, these are very specific things that states have done, but I think states, as John has said, the easy strategies have been exploited in the main. Now then, we're seeing states, as revenues have increased, beginning to, in some cases, restore some of the cuts that they had made in benefits or payment rates or eligibility. When we look around the country, we'll talk about that more when our report comes out next week. But states are also looking at what can be done with the overall structure. What can be done? Just kind of tweaking some of these policies may not be enough. Maybe we need to find a way to kind of look at Medicaid in the big picture and restructure it or reform it in some ways. So states are looking at that. The federal government's clearly looking at that. And when folks are focusing on this now around the country, there seems to be a real interest in focusing on personal responsibility, finding ways to empower consumers in one way or another, finding some way to bring in some of the things that are happening in the marketplace now, or market-based solutions. Long-term care continues to be a focus, and of course states are interested in what can be done, from a state perspective, where the state revenue base is really inadequate for long-term sustainability. What can be done to move forward? Now, there are several states that are doing things that are kind of cutting edge right now. Vermont was mentioned with the waiver that was approved last week. I was talking yesterday to people from Florida, and they believe they have verbal approval for their waiver. The folks in South Carolina continue to work there. Other states like West Virginia, California, Kentucky, a number of other states are kind of watching what's happening there. California had a big, kind of what they call a Medi-Cal redesign program, but it was mostly about reorganizing the financing of the program. I need to wrap up here because Karen told me there's a trap door right here if I go 1 minute too long. So let me just wrap up here very quickly, and we can talk about some of these things. I look forward to the discussion. But when you look at the forecast, the people who make a living, the actuaries, looking at what the future of Medicaid is in terms of the spending, the people at the Congressional Budget Office, the folks in the federal Medicaid and Medicare agency, and when they look down the road, everyone sees that Medicaid is going to continue to grow, and the spending growth is going to be on the order of 8.5% to 9% when you look down the road. And I don't know, is there a chairman of your, the revenue raising committee, tax committee here? I mean, what state has revenues that are expected to grow at that pace. So the outlook is that Medicaid would continue to consume an ever-growing share of state budgets. And all of this pressure is going to continue to cause this issue to be kind of in the middle of the radar screen. Let me just stop right there because Karen's getting very nervous. Anyway. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Any questions for Dr. Smith?
I think you've touched on it, but would you elaborate on your slide about embracing market solutions in Medicaid?
Sure. When you look at, I'll just use a South Carolina or a Florida kind of an example. There's an expectation that there would be, in South Carolina, they use the term of a personal health care account, a PHA, I believe it is the terminology they're using. And in effect, there would be a certain amount of money that would be set aside, and it would, in effect, change Medicaid from a defined benefit to a defined contribution kind of an approach, so that there would be a certain amount. And if you're able to go out from among the alternatives that are available and select a plan that was below that benchmark price, which would be adjusted by age, gender, and possibly by health status in some way, then you would be able to take the balance and put it into your account from which you could buy services that would not be covered in the benefit package that then would be available. So it's that kind of an approach, kind of embracing some of the concepts that are inherent in health savings accounts or that kind of thing.
Other questions?
On the asset side, looking at nursing homes and divestment, if we could delay entry into nursing homes for a period of time, there are dollars to be saved through that process. Has anyone looked at providing an incentive to keep assets? For example, an asset protection model that would allow people or encourage people to purchase long-term care insurance. And that long-term care insurance would have the effect of protecting a percentage of one's assets. And the amount of long-term care you purchased would determine the amount of asset that you protect. Has anyone looked at whether or not a model like that would encourage different behavior?
Yeah, this is a very good and timely question. There are a lot of people looking at this asset issue right now because it's the assets that kind of determine whether someone might become eligible for Medicaid now or at some point in time down the road. There are some, there are four states in the country that have what are called partnership programs, and those are the only four allowed under current federal law. One of the proposals being discussed is to open that up so more states could. What that does is to provide an incentive in the sense that if you have long-term care insurance, that kind of exempts the assets for that period of time so that you might, for example, if you had 3 years of coverage for long-term care, if you had long-term care insurance that provided 3 years worth of coverage, then that would cover the what is now the 36-month waiting period, look-back period on Medicaid assets. But this is a tax issue in terms of providing tax incentives, and there are plenty of people in Congress looking at this right now to find a way to increase savings rates and to protect those assets for individuals so they could use them themselves, so people would set aside their own resources to cover long-term care in the future. Yeah. Very timely issue.
I'm going to ask our other two speakers to join us down here. You can ask another question of Dr. Smith or our previous two speakers.
Hi, I was just wondering, I was looking at your slide, I believe it was 19, where you're looking at new provider taxes, and I was just wondering if you would briefly address how this is impacting. I mean, if we're just driving more cost shifting in, you know, to those providers, and what effect that has on participation in the program via the more cost shifting they do, the more cost there is to the private insurance market, if more people end up dropping private insurance and participating in the program.
Good question. Provider taxes have a different connotation in Medicaid. Medicaid, there have been governors that have been besieged by certain provider groups, particularly nursing home, in the nursing home industry, kind of demanding that they be taxed. Because when Medicaid receives money in that way, say from nursing homes, let's say it's a 3% tax, then Medicaid, when it spends that money, receives federal matching on its expenditures, and therefore, just to use a kind of a straightforward example, the industry could be taxed at 3%, Medicaid could increase its rates by 6%, and because your matching rate is greater than 50%, there would be a little left over there for the state as well. So, you know, that's just kind of a simple model. The issue right now is that at the federal level, these special financing arrangements, which have been done partly through provider taxes, partly through intergovernmental transfers and other mechanisms, have come under scrutiny. That's an understatement. I don't know, maybe Mark could talk about this, but we come under attack. Congress right now is looking at ways to further restrict the opportunities, change the rules a little bit. There are many people who feel that it wasn't the role of the Medicaid law in the first place to provide these kinds of opportunities. They're perfectly legal under current law, but there are folks in Congress who think that it's not what Medicaid was designed to do.